We have a basketball program that we all expect to compete in the Big Ten and national championships year in and year out.
There's no other way to look at it. It's one of the better jobs in the Big Ten.
Final four!
I didn't think you got me this good, but it feels good!
First, I need that national championship.
Hey, everybody, a special crossover podcast between the 200 level and the boardroom. I'm Mike Carpenter from the 200 level.
And I'm Maddie, and we got Johnny and Josh with us here this evening. Mike, thanks for having us. We've never been on another podcast before, so this is exciting. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't, I popped maybe on like Jeremy's podcast a couple of times, but the idea of kind of doing a dual one, we'll both put this up on our feeds for our followers, and we're going to have video posted as well. So I wanted to start by... I'm going to throw this to one of you guys to kind of lead things off here. So we are here this evening to talk, of course, about Illini basketball, but there was a path that kind of led to this conversation in the first place. So for contextual reasons, for listeners of either podcast, why are we here tonight? We're going to go back about, was it 13 or 14 days ago? It was at Madison.
Yeah.
It was that evening.
At 21. Yeah.
Okay. So if you want to, you guys take the lead to start and kind of provide the context with what you saw come across the timeline and the reaction that ensued.
This is Johnny's moment to shine right here.
Do it.
Yeah. So obviously it was not a fun game at Madison. And I think everyone gets a little emotional on Twitter after the game. We're feeling it. You're feeling it. We saw you have a tweet, which you said, disheartened, bummed, and ultimately concerned. Where is this thing going?
He's memorized it.
I don't mean just this Illini team, but the program as a whole with Underwood at the helm. It's weird to feel like there are more questions than answers given what he's accomplished in the last 5 years. So we see that tweet. Josh actually sends it to our group chat. And we're all like, wow, this might be a little extreme. And I think the thing that really caught us was questioning the program. I think everyone had maybe like, hey, we're a little bit disappointed in how this season is going, another sure. tough loss. But when we saw that, we're like, wow, that's a bit knee jerk. So then we're like, okay, someone's got to respond to this, whatever. And it brought me back to just like, what if other times where, I don't know, people have gone maybe a little crazy about questioning a coach, and then we look back on it and be like, okay, that was a little foolish. So went back into Mike's tweets and saw one.
There's a few in there over the 12 years I've been on there.
Exactly. And there are a few about Bielema. There's a few about Brad. And there was one in particular that stood out to me, which was the night of the Illinois-Kansas game in 2023, off the heels of like a really great 8-win season, top 25 team. And week two, Mike tweets, how long until fans turn on Bielema? This is unacceptable. So just took a screenshot of that and quote tweeted Mike's original tweet to be like, hey, almost implying, saying without words, like, here's another maybe overreaction of this is a small bump in the road, but we still have the right guy.
Yeah, I think that the Bielema, if there was a choice to say, wow, this guy truly can be reactionary, that was the perfect choice. I'll briefly give context to that one because the very next day after that Kansas loss, the game sucked. So I was already bummed about that. But then I was thinking, okay, there's a reason why that tweet elicited a reaction. And I reread it back. It's like, well, no kidding it did, because that was on its face a very poorly executed tweet for what I was trying to communicate. I clarified it later that day. And I guess the very nature of Twitter is the old adage of like, write, walk away from your computer, edit, come back to it later. But we don't do that. I can't speak for you guys. I don't do that all the time. So that was a poorly executed tweet. And I gave context later that day in the podcast. Essentially, the point that I could have much more eloquently made, which I did not when I tweeted that out, was I've lived, and we have, all of us, through many 5 and 7 seasons after an 8 or 9 or sometimes even 10 win season. I was like, oh God, if this goes 5 and 7, are we going to be back to 30,000 people in the stadium? Are we going to be back to that sort of apathy 2019 Lovie Smith? Well, I guess before that. But I didn't put that in the tweet. So therefore, I can't be here saying, well, come on, guys, didn't you get the real subtext? No, it was like the words in that tweet could easily have been construed like that. Okay, so let's talk about the tweet on the Wisconsin evening. I did a podcast that night, and I promise you guys, I was not angry so much as just, ugh. Like I couldn't conjure up rage or anger about it because the Michigan State game took a lot out of, I think, everybody with all the circumstances around it and the Terrence Shannon jersey and just the, you know, all that. And to me, let's talk about the word concern. And then you guys, you focus, I think rightly, John, on the program as a whole. Was it fair to say if Josh, Matt, or John, before I continue, I don't want to hog the mic here. If one of you wants to speak to, if you had been concerned after that Wisconsin game, how would you have defined that level of concern? Because yeah. It would not have been the way that I, when I said the direction of the program, for sure. Yeah, and I get that.
I'll jump in on this one. So I think it's very important for context to understand all three of us, four of us, when Sam's on the podcast, when we went to school. We went to school from 2014 to 2018, some of us 2019. And I know. Yeah. So that time frame.
So thank you for your service. Usually they salute us, you know, and they say thank you. Damn. Yeah, four tours in Crush. Thank you.
Yeah,
three in Black Eye. Thank you. Came back with an orange heart.
So we had zero tournaments, and we had 1-6-1 football season. So did I do that right, Maddie?
Yeah. I was just, and on top of that, it's like what was the best football game that we went to? What was the best basketball game? The best basketball game was either freshman year, the Michigan game where we went on like the 20-0 run in overtime, you know, went on a 10-0 run in overtime. This is pre-new State Farm Center, or our junior year, Malcolm Hill, senior night, Michigan State game. Kipper Nichols goes off. It's not even to clinch a tournament. It's just to, like, I don't know, be the next 8 out or something like that. Mm-hmm. Best football game.
North Carolina loss.
North Carolina first 5 quarter. Minutes. First quarter. You know, I have that video of Keyshawn Vaughn's run saved on my computer that I watch every few months just to feel something. So yeah, just to give that context, I know Josh will take over again. That's when we went to school.
Bill Cubitt year. Now there was the Nebraska win to start off 4-1.
Yeah.
And then they went 1-1.
Geronimo Allison. Yes.
With the three straight pass interferences in the quarter of the end zone. Yeah.
Yes. That was awesome. There was some wild. Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah, no. So that's the context of where we like establish how our feelings towards Brad start. Brad is to us our savior. He reignited our Illini fandom, or like made it worthwhile to all of us. Like, and like, it's kind of like we put in all those effort those 5 years, and then when it comes to us finally winning, it's like, thank you, Brad. So that is for sure the context of us as fans. Some of us were fans prior to us going to school, but like our context of like how we, like the hours and sweat that we put in while we were there. Sure. Now, your question was related to what was the level of concern?
I guess it'd be if you had been, because in the mire of that, not just the 3-game losing streak, which was sort of the nadir of it, but, and I thought the Nebraska game was, it felt like it at the time, but really like a 5-6 week stretch where things were discombobulated and the injuries and illness, of course, did play a role. And we'll talk about how much so later on in this podcast, but I guess if you were to have said your biggest concern after that Wisconsin game was blank, what would it be?
Yeah, no, I start my level of concern with my level of expectation heading into the season. Now, the expectation of our team was supposed to be rising, and it was rising throughout the entire year. We got ranked, I think, as like high as top 10, but it was obviously slowing down, and we were unranked by the time the Wisconsin game came around. And so my expectations at the start of the season, I always tell myself, I'm not going to let one game determine or group of games determine how I feel about the team. There was one clear goal I wanted for this team is we were in the Elite Eight last year. I knew this was going to be a rebounding year. I need to make the tournament a Sweet 16 would be icing on the cake for this team. But like making the tournament is the main goal. After that Wisconsin game, we still had a clear path to the tournament. And so while it was frustrating, and I'm frustrated watching us get murdered by Wisconsin by 20, I'm like, okay, there's still a path. Now, it wasn't clear what the path was going to be, but over the context of Brad's last 5 to 6 years, he has made sure that he does what he can as a coach to ensure that we are going to be in the tournament, because that's what he's done the last 5 years. And so I don't question Brad until the season's over. And that's my level of concern, is I won't let there be concern until I see the season as a whole, because what he's done over these last 5 years is win Big Ten basketball games. And that's all we have left besides Duke, which is unrelated.
Yeah.
And that's fair. Yeah. Sorry, John.
And I would say too, like, it was Wisconsin game was definitely disappointing, but it was still almost just confusing when, like, Ivicic was coming off the bench. Jake Davis was starting at the five. I think my expectations were just so low for that game to begin with. Like, you're traveling on the road to a team who's top 10. And I was just not expecting us to win at all. And you had the weird thing of, like, Jake Davis doesn't even come back at halftime because he's dealing with the stomach bug. So,
yeah, true.
And like, right after that was the first game after the Merez injury. I think we were almost like in a stage of grief of
a little shell shocked.
Yeah. Just like shell shocked and like trying to recalibrate what this season is going to be. And you're like half making excuses, but half also just trying to like process. So I think maybe we just might've been in different phases of like you were, and like you had said, you're more concerned than angry. And yeah. I think we were, maybe just a little bit more confused and optimistic that what we were seeing was more of like a short-term
situational
setback. But yeah. It was hard in the context of like we had seen like five different examples of, okay, well, we made the excuse when KJ was out, then we made the excuse of KJ's foul trouble, that's why we lost the Michigan State game, then it was Tommy has mono, then it was Tommy's ankle, then it was these other two guys have the flu. Then it was now. So it was like totally fair at the same time to be like, can we just stop making excuses? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, our context was just like, I don't know, we're still above 500 in the Big Ten and have 6 quad 1 wins, which is more than almost every team not in the SEC or Big 12. So
I think I appreciate the context, because the years of 2014 to 2018 were rough for anybody, and to have been there like you guys actually in Orange Crush, that might be, and I'm not trying to pile on, that might be the worst.
It was the worst.
Years.
No, it was. Yeah, I think statistically speaking, like it was the worst 4 years. Like, I'm sure there were some, I think the 70s were pretty bad.
70s were rough I wasn't around, but I remember my dad talked about the, I guess, would have been Gary Moeller, Bob Blackman era for football. And then Gene Bartow before Lou Henson went like 6-20 his 1 year. And even right. Lou, you know, I wrote about this in the last Substack I did, comparing Lou and Brad. And this is like the critical of Brad this year. But, and I also mentioned that, hey, well, it took Lou 9 years to get to an Elite Eight. And, you know, so, I mean, if we're just even looking at the actual metrics, Brad, I have always felt, is somewhat more like a Lou Henson than a Bill Self. In some ways, he's kind of a hybrid of the two because of his dynamic recruiting ability, which Lou had with Jimmy Collins, but Brad can kind of do regardless of assistant coaches. I'll give you the context to that particular tweet and the concern of the program, because I would understand why that would raise eyebrows. To me, at that point in the season, this is pre-Duke, and that was a whole other thing. To me, at that point in the season, there are three questions that I had. The first one was roster turnover, which is inevitable. Sure. In the NIL era, Brad has done a magnificent job of roster turnover. There was one exception, but if that exception is 2023 and you're a 9 seed and whatever, I mean, we can take those. And I think that's totally fair. We're looking at a Kansas and a Baylor this year, just whatever. And other schools are in far worse shape than we are. But the roster turnover is one factor, especially when we didn't have a Terrence or a Coleman to look forward to next year as returnees. It was, I hope Tommy, I hope Merez. Then everything else felt, tenuous. Right?
When was the last time you knew, like, so little about, like, an Illinois basketball team going into the season?
Never.
Like, ever. Never. And you lost 50% of your returners before night one with Ty announcing that he was going to register.
Yeah.
You knew you didn't even know how to pronounce some of the guys' names that were coming back. So you knew nothing, which I also think does factor into what the expectations of the season were, where it's like,
sure.
I had no idea. Yeah, they're saying KJ is going to be like a lottery pick. Oh, this Trey White guy and this Kerry Booth transfer. And like, there, the expectation, I had zero expectations going into the season. And I know the team got off to a really hot start, and maybe those expectations were like a little bit unfair with some of the
they were inflated.
A little inflated, right? But I mean, if you kind of fast forward now to the end of the season where we're at, like, for my expectations being none, and I'm curious to hear from Mike, from you, like,
yeah,
this lines up with kind of like if you told me, hey, we'll be like a 6-7, like with a team that I don't know anyone on the team with, you got one returner in DGL, yeah. I'd probably say sure.
100%. And that's what makes this such an anomaly of a season, is because at that point when I'm tweeting that out, when we look at that 5 to 6 week stretch, probably beginning with, would we say USC at home? Which,
yeah,
because we think about that. Before that, it was the Penn State game. And we're thinking, without KJ, we did that. I mean, you know, so obviously there is a sense, and you're right about this, Matt, a sense of, you know, inflated or, you know, expectations. I do think it's okay during a season for expectations to wane or for them to grow based on what you see. And this team with these tantalizing performances at Oregon, at Indiana, Penn State at home, a Missouri win that's looking better and better that we didn't know it at the time, but still. So you're right that, Matt, somehow they've ended up right there. And that is 100% a credit to Brad to get them back here. But the three things for why I tweeted that, and I will say some of these are still lingering. Though, again, I do want to preface this, and I think it's important because, you know, I can't preface every tweet necessarily, but Brad Underwood should be the coach of Illinois basketball, barring a personal decision on his part. Like, he has done so many things to resurrect this program. So the critiques I'm about to levy are not anywhere in the same neighborhood as, hey, Josh, could you give Sean Miller a call? It's like, well, why?
Oh, boy.
Why would we do? I mean, you could do worse, but why? That's not an improvement. So, I mean, you got a pretty good lot in life, but roster turnover, which is inevitable, and Brad's done a good job navigating that. But there wouldn't have been the true blue superstar coming back like a Terrence, which you knew was going to elevate your floor immensely like it did in 2024. The second one was staff changes, which has become louder and louder, and I think justifiably so. Now, credit to the defensive change, which may, to Brad's credit, sort of like when they figured out the DeMass thing in mid-December last year, may have changed the course of the season. I mean, that's how consequential it looks through two games. But staff changes nonetheless, the best staffs that Brad has brought together have had a little bit more of a strategic element right next to him. Now, Tyler, if he is in fact the offensive guru, his track record is saying you could do worse. I mean, I know it's Terrence Shannon. I know it was Marcus Damask, but while it can frustrate me at times, the metrics have said that's good offense. The defense, though, with if we want to blame Zach Hamer, whatever, I know nothing about the guy. I do know that back when Stephen Gentry was here as that third assistant, not to recruit, but to be an X's and O's guy. So staff changes are something else that I think you will keep Orlando, you'll keep Jeff. Okay, I feel good about that. But Brad Underwood, as good as he is at so many macro things, leaves me wanting as far as in-game adjustments, which I know is such a blanket term. But the thing is, this year, more than most, there's been some glaring in-game things. And then the third and final one, and this is as personal as I could get about Brad Underwood, who on the whole, I like most everything. I like his bluster. I like his ambition, but there's been something this year, and maybe he's trying to protect his players. I don't know. What I've interpreted to be a lack of accountability. Now, those three things together at that time led to that tweet. And I will say that despite the last two games, and like Sunday was just like, are you kidding? Okay, well, I will take this shoe. I'll put it in my mouth. I'll eat a hat, whatever. This is amazing. I just think that nonetheless, there are still going to be a longer list of things for him to address this offseason than previous offseasons. Hence my concern then, lessened, of course, by the last two games. But it just seems like there are, and I think he's a reflective guy. Like, I don't question the fact that Brad Underwood is going to get to April 5th or something and say, that part didn't work. I'm going to go change that, because he's done it before. He has.
Exactly. And I think that's why we are so high on him, too, is just he's shown the ability to change at least more philosophies, maybe in-game adjustments people can quibble with. But I think that's also why we were questioning so much outrage amongst the fan base of like, we've peaked with Brad, get rid of Brad, whatever. It's like, sure. Has this guy not shown you time and time again, like he's willing to make adjustments, or I don't know, like great talent evaluator. But I think most of your critiques were fair. I think particularly the coaching staff one too. What doesn't really get mentioned is Tim Anderson leaving the staff, like,
sure,
right before the season. And same thing, losing Chester Frazier. Thankfully, you were able to replace him with Orlando. I think we came to the defense of Hamer a little bit just because the NCAA changed the rules of like 3 assistant coaches to 5 assistant coaches. So if Hamer was still the assistant to the head coach in like the Jeff Alexander role, which he was before the NCAA rule change, would we be calling for his head? Probably not. And same thing, like, is it Quay Jones' fault who came the last minute to replace Tim Anderson? Also probably not. So some of that seems more a little bit more of just like, hey, that's the circumstance of the season and you lost your best defensive player in Ty Rogers. In some ways, there's still like accountability towards Brad to what do you need to make happen so that Tim Anderson stays, or what do you need to make happen so that Ty Rogers doesn't redshirt for sure. And hopefully they go out and get another stud assistant coach in the offseason. But I think we were very slow to be like, is it fair to blame Zach Hamer, who came in 2019-20 as a video coordinator? Illinois won every year, and then he moved up to assistant head coach, another like winning season. Then his first year as an assistant, we go to the Elite Eight. Now we're just turning on the guy. So
it's a scapegoat. You know, yeah, it's like blaming the hitting coach on a baseball team.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and I think in regards to that too, I mentioned lack of accountability. One more thing you mentioned was Ty Rogers. I think another thing that, and it's, I'm still not sure where I stand on this, is, you know, the hashtag everyday guys mantra has applied more often than not with Brad Underwood. And that's even with changing rosters. Some years it's going to be more effective of a mantra than not. I think what began to bother me is the season, not the season. That's the funny thing. We're talking a 5-6 week stretch, and there were external factors, though I think that some of them were exacerbated by what I perceive to be an odd bit of stubbornness from a coach that often has not been stubborn. Like, that's not really what he's been. What I love about Brad is his adaptability. But this everyday guys culture that we speak of and has often been accurate for his program, with a Ty Rogers on the bench, and then we see games where, you know, a Trey White is out for sickness, illness. He's out for 2 games. Then Michigan State, by all accounts, fully healthy. We're gassed at the end of that game. Trey White's just sitting on his hands on the bench, 0 minutes played. And then 3 games later, he's dropping 19 at Michigan. I mean, not to say he would have done that against Michigan State, but a point being, we bring in a Benham Rickhouse. We bring in a Trey White. We say, Ty, take a seat. Luke, we don't have the cash. I can't guarantee that Ty playing in Luke Goody equals X amount more wins. I can't guarantee that, because it very well may not have. I just think that when things were at their absolute lowest, which wasn't that long ago, I did start questioning, well, wait a second, Brad. Like, do we have a potential fork in the road when it comes to building your culture back? Because already he's up against it in this era. And I just worried that this offseason in particular was going to be more of a challenge to find not just pieces that were talented and skilled. He's going to do that. But find the pieces that also adapt to the culture that he wants to set. Because that was when the Wisconsin game, if we want to say they were soft, or the defense was objectively bad. And then the Duke game felt like, whoa. What happened? Like, in other words, it was so bad, despite how good Duke is, that it was hard for me to not be concerned about how do you conjure back that culture, which he'd done a very good job at building. Now, remarkably, here we are after the Michigan game, and I'm like, well, I guess there you go. One defensive adjustment, culture's back, you know? So I mean, it might have been as simple as that.
Well, that's the thing about culture. You hope is that no one or two things, no matter how high or how low, should ever impact, you know, you should be able to return to your sort of homeostasis of culture. If you do have a good culture, that you can get your ass kicked, you know, by 21 against Wisconsin, and get your ass kicked by 109 against Duke. And as Brad talked about in the postgame radio interview a couple of games ago, he said, you know, these guys could have folded. He said that after Michigan, you know, these guys could have absolutely folded. And to me, that actually does prove, like, you do have a culture here. These guys could have absolutely, we're falling down to a 9 seed. You guys are talking about the bubble. To me, that actually proves, yes, you do have a culture that no one win or loss, no matter the magnitude, should be able to, like, rock you off of that course. So to me, does that not sort of prove, like, after 8 years, the guy does have a a culture. The guy does have a shtick, a thing after.
I think you're, you know, I think you're right. That's why I didn't include that with the three concerns last year. At 2 weeks ago, yeah, that would have been a fourth one. We're like, oh crap, are we losing the culture too? But then I'm like, well, wait a second, which really speaks to his biggest strength, I think, as a coach, is when you think about the, we can go back to Alan Griffin leaving for whatever reason. We don't need to touch that.
Let's talk about what's his face.
Pods, Pajimski.
Jesus Christ.
What, Curbelo?
No, Mark Smith. Oh my goodness. We can talk about that. The rest of the week. There's always
think about that.
There's not going to get along with everyone. Look, Brad is old school. And he's not going to get along with everyone. And I do think, and I don't know if this has to do with your accountability point, like some people were tweeting videos of Brad from a couple of years ago getting heated up on the bench and, you know, doing his typical grab the guy at the end of the bench and throw him into the game. He's kind of chilled out a little bit. I'm wondering if someone has told him that, or I'm wondering if he's changed a little bit. But I don't think every guy wants to play for a coach like that, which is fine. I want to find dudes that want to play for a dude like that. If I were 18 years old, hell yeah, I want to play for a dude like that. My cross country coach was like that. Hell yeah, let's go. Like, I want to play. He was a friggin' ex-Marine. That was awesome. I just naturally think that a guy like Brad Underwood is not going to just jive with every 17, 18, 19-year-old guy. And that's fine, I think. And again, we don't want to speculate on the Mark Smiths or the Pajimskis or the Alan Griffins or all these guys. But you got to find guys that fit into his culture. It's his culture. It's his program at the end of the day, right? He's the face of the program, I think, at the end of the day.
He is. Oh, for sure. I mean, he's when you see the hype video games, I mean, rightly so for what he's built here. He is the face of that. I mean, the fact that they include, you talk about him not, you know, chilling out a little bit. It was just 3 years ago that he had that ejection against Ohio State. And that's right there in the hype video. You know, it still gets people pumped up when they saw a coach getting all fired up like that. And I do think there was something about him tempering out. He didn't need to do that last year. You know, he didn't have a group of guys where he needed to be on their ass about things because they were older and they got that. So yeah, those are my three concerns that led into questioning, I guess questioning concern are one and the same in a lot of respects, where I was concerned about the fact that the list that you usually go into an off season with was going to be a lot longer this off season. Now, what I did not anticipate was a few days later, the Duke thing would happen. And then you'd have this, whoa, 180, which the Iowa game, it's sort of like an incomplete grade only because Iowa's just been so bad. But then they would have won by one against Michigan. I'm ecstatic. Sure. You do that. And all of a sudden I'm like, yeah, we aren't losing to Purdue. I mean, just like that. So hold on,
Mike, you're all the way on the other.
You skipped. Skipped a special two words a special two words that I've had to tweet out a couple
who
times.
Who tweeted that one to take accountability? Who was it?
Yeah, it's Josh, me. I'm raising my hand.
Put your hand up.
I'm raising it just because.
Which two, Josh? Thing. For context, which two words?
Yeah.
Mike, you
aptly name your podcast episode after Duke, and this could be resolved in one question. But
sure.
You named it Rock Bottom, and after the tweet that we had issue with from the Wisconsin game, it is very clearly, I think, related to the program, and if it was related to the season. Which I think is what you're going to say, then I don't have as much issue with it. But if it's related to the program, then...
Yeah, I think that's, again, and that's Twitter. It's
right.
That's baked into social media, is there is oftentimes no context and no nuance and so much space to just evoke, like, to fill in the Mad Libs, to fill in the blank. And that's part of just the cesspool of what the internet, I think, is. But yeah, that matters. Like, was it... And maybe that... Yeah.
Well, let's let the man talk.
I mean, all of the above, and I'll explain why. Of course, Rock Bottom is not Gene Bartow single digit wins before Lou comes in. I mean, I wasn't around for it. Rock Bottom was not. Oh God, what would another Rock Bottom be in my lifetime? I mean, fortunately, part of the reason I wrote a book is because there's only been a few, and you guys sadly lived through four of those, like in the pit. And I understand.
I was going to say we were there.
Contextually speaking. When I was thinking about what to title that podcast, it really wasn't any sort of deep thought or like, that's it, get Brad Underwood the hell out of here. Because I even said on that podcast, it was in the opening segment, I said, you know, listen, if there's going to be a comeback story, whether it's this year or whether it's 2025, 2026, what an amazing place to start. I mean, if we're talking about a 43-point loss to Duke, a game we all look forward to before the season, is like, hey, you know, like, what the hell? Shoot your shot at Madison Square Garden. Should be a fun game. Well, obviously, it wasn't. No, the rock bottom to me, though, was not like deep thought or anything. It was, okay, worst loss in program history. Now, one could argue, well, it was a, you know, third-ranked team, and they're probably going to be in the national championship game. Yeah, you're probably right. So in that respect, margin, how much does it matter? But just historically speaking, in the program, in the media guides going forward, largest margin of defeat, 43 versus Duke. Okay, so that's one rock bottom in terms of just like, ugh. Rock bottom for a few other respects, though, and yes, this season more specifically, I do think for Brad Underwood post year two, because the first 2 years you throw him out, you say that was a rebuild. And really by the end of year two, they were already competitive. But for Brad Underwood in the last 6 years, rock bottom, only because for a program that had prided itself on really representing itself well on the biggest stages. I mean, the UConn 30-0 run. Okay, I think we all compartmentalize that about as good as a fan base could, because what the hell are you going to do? Like, it's an amazing year. UConn's historic, and they were. But rock bottom for this year, rock bottom for the last 6 years for Brad Underwood. I understand why someone look at that and say, Carp, don't you remember Gross? Of course I remember Gross. Of course I remember the tail end of Lou Henson, where they couldn't get past the first game of the tournament. And I liked Lou because he was like an old grandpa or something. He was all I knew as a kid. But, you know, yeah, that was a little bit deflating when you beat Long Beach State and knew that you were going to lose to Vanderbilt, because it was just, well, duh. So, yeah, that was it. I mean, I think that the rock bottom thing is pretty self-explanatory. It was really straightforward. It was largest margin of defeat. It's rock bottom for this team. It's rock bottom for the last 6 years, Brad Underwood. And yeah, that was it. I mean, yeah. Truly, that was.
I knew that your explanation was going to say related to the season and obviously the specific game, worst loss in program history by margin. I do believe, though, that Brad has proved himself, and I time and again, and I'll use a specific example here. In 2023, we, from February 4th on, we played 11 games. We won 4 of them. And so he rebounded from that year quickly into a Elite Eight performance the following year. And then we're obviously not having the year that we want, but like I mentioned at the start of this, we still had a opportunity to still make the tournament. We just had to beat Iowa. And then everyone, including you, said, we're in the tournament, which was our expectation probably for the season. Get in the tournament. We're all happy. If it wasn't a tournament, then yeah, I'll do the questioning like you're doing the questioning. And then I think like he still had the opportunity to prove himself like he has done in the past. And so like, that's why I took so much like offense to it. Like I obviously was like so frustrated. It is the first thing we go to Finley Dunn's in Lakeview and for every game. Nice. They help us out a little bit there. We get to promote them.
There it is. Mike, if you're ever in the city for a game, come by, we'll buy you.
Finley Dunn's. Got
yes,
it.
Finley
Dunn's. So we're at Lakeview.
It's on Lincoln and Cornelia.
Okay, sweet.
Yeah.
Right there. Right. If you hit the Paul Line on meat market, you've gone too far.
The first thing, instead of like caring about like ringing the bell, which we do at Finley Dunn's, is I told Maddie, I said, I'm going to tweet rock.
I go, don't do it, Josh.
Like,
yeah. I go, don't do
like,
it.
He was
I go,
like,
don't do
he
it.
Was like, don't do it. Don't do it. I was like, I have to. Like, I just can't. I couldn't believe it. I just could not believe it.
So again,
believe the tweet.
I couldn't believe you.
Or the podcast title.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say I stand by it only. And what I want to talk about in a bit is expectations as a program, because it would be, if what was loaded into that two word title, which again, I would be fully honest, like, all right, I wanted to have a podcast title with subtext, nuance. And I was like, okay, I got no, I didn't. I had no good punts for Duke. I had no good New York, Madison Square Garden punts. I was like, that sucked ass, rock bottom, 43-point loss, slap it on, upload it, up we go. But I guess a question I would have, and any of you guys could field this. I mean, because you guys, the podcast that you guys have starts with Brad's quote about national championship. Like, we could compete for national championships, right? Now, it would be foolish and completely naive to say, well, come on, Brad, why aren't you in the Final Four every year? Why aren't you going to be? Well, because that's not the reality of it. However, what I love about Brad, and I think we all do, is that he does speak about those grand ambitions. He does actually, I think he constructed this roster to try to fix whatever ailed them against UConn. It was like, screw that. That's not going to happen to me again. We're going for it. You know, and I think that was his goal. And I bet if he asked me, he's like, no, my goal is that we're going to actually hit our threes in the tournament and make a run of the championship. Like he still believes that. And who knows? Right. But I guess my question to you would be this, because on one hand, expectations cannot be raised without success. And Brad Underwood, because of his success, has raised expectations. So the two truths that I am trying to hold on to, and I think that wherever you end on the spectrum is going to depend on context and just perspective, you know, so it'll vary by person, is, okay, you've got us to this point. You're aiming for this point. This team this year is at this point. Therefore, what kind of criticisms can be levied? I mean, is that, I view it almost like a sliding scale that depends on a lot of variables. And for me, when we were in that thing, which went beyond those three games against Michigan State, Wisconsin, Duke, it was before that where it was like, this is off. It doesn't feel right. They aren't really doing what he probably had set out to do. And also knowing at the same time that Brad himself probably had some sleepless nights. I think he even said that after the Wisconsin game. Maybe he didn't sleep or something like that. I mean, I know he said that once or twice, and I believe him. That as expectations change within his own mind, can we as fans not say, hey, listen, we love everything you've done. This and that, you're our coach, but.
Yeah, I think there's definitely room for just like disappointment in season of like both results. And I think for me, like watching that Duke game, it also felt like there was an effort component missing, which is fair to call out. And I think we even had a little bit back and forth that night of you being like, hey, are you guys still not concerned? We just lost by 40 to Duke, or we're down 20 and a half times.
Come on. It was a fun pissing match. It was fun while it lasted.
I was not in a good mood.
Exactly. Exactly. So yeah, like that night was not fun. And like, I don't think any of us takes losses particularly well. So I think there's definitely room for criticism and nuance. But I think the biggest thing is effort. So that's why everyone on this call right now, the Michigan game was such a breath of fresh air, right? We were just crashing the glass. And you could see like the energy that the team had that was kind of missing during that stretch. So I think that's very like subjective and qualitative. But like as we close out the season, it's just, I feel like it's going to be like, did this team play hard? And hopefully that's the case in the Big Ten tournament. Hopefully that's the case in the NCAA tournament. Like when I think about most people really disappointed with Matt Meyer and how his Illinois tenure went. And I can kind of chalk it up to like his last three games were terrible. Like he went 0 for 10 from three in the Big Ten tournament and the NCAA tournament. And it's like, we don't need to win these games, but at least like, once again, be everyday guys and show up and be competitive and just give us hope that like, okay, well, I feel good that Kylan's going to come back and kind of bring the culture next year. Hopefully Tommy comes back and brings a culture. So I think this team is really, really difficult to evaluate on just because there's so many things on paper. Like we've played 10 of the top 16 teams in KenPom or 10 games against the top 16. That's like so many difficult games that you rarely see. So like you can chalk up Duke game. Oh, okay. Just like when you play a top three team neutral site, like you're going to lose. When you play a top 10 team in Wisconsin on the road, you're probably going to lose. So you could almost like make excuses and then throw in the injuries. There's so many caveats to it, but there's still like fair criticism to be had. And I think it revolves around the effort. Some people get really frustrated on the shot selection too. And that one's a little trickier one of like, sometimes we do jack up threes. Sometimes shooting threes is almost like strategic and allows yourself to offensive rebound. So I don't know if Josh and Maddie have other areas where they feel like criticism is fair, but I think the effort is something that can definitely pop.
Mm-hmm. I love my school. I love my school very much. And I just want to see the boys play hard. I have said this many, many times that I have 1 year of basketball experience in sixth grade. So I am the furthest person on planet Earth from being able to give X's and O's criticism. So when I watch Illinois basketball, or any basketball, I'm not able to see the same things that guys that have been playing basketball for a decade can see. And, oh, they need to make this adjustment and this adjustment. I can tell you that the adjustments that Brad has made since he's gotten to Champaign in the last 7-8 years, we are not a score in 7 seconds anymore and force 25 turnovers. Like, that is a completely different style of basketball. So I have faith that he's able to make the adjustments, but I don't have enough X's and O's understanding to, oh, tonight we should hedge the screens and tonight we should go under the screens. Yeah. And, you know, we should put our, you know, Trey White on the four tonight. And I don't have enough, you know, just don't know enough about basketball to say that. So I just want to see effort, right? I just want to see the guys play hard. And if at the end of the day they lose and they bow out in the tournament, but goddamn it, those guys played hard, then that's all I want. You're absolutely correct. What was I like that, Mike. How'd you say where you need a success to raise the
scale? Yeah, it's scale. Basically, yeah. I don't know if catch 22 would be the proper term for it. It probably isn't. I'm probably completely screwing up like idioms here, but I think that the idea is, you know, a coach comes in, he raises the bar, especially with the fact that he rebuilt it. I mean, it was a 2-year rebuilding project. And then from there, they've basically been cruising. I mean, we see the stats even after Michigan. It was like, okay, still most wins in the Big Ten the last 6 years. The only team in the Big Ten in the last 6 years to have a winning record in all 6 years. Not Izzo, not Painter, Brad Underwood. All these things are remarkable, right? So because of that, the expectations raise within him and the fan base. And that's where I think it's, and I don't even have a good answer for it in terms of, you know, when I criticize Brad Underwood, I try to be very pointed in it. Even after the Duke game, if someone was like, Brad Underwood sucks, he's just like, I've never blatantly said Brad Underwood sucks because I don't believe he sucks. I do think that, like many other coaches, there are blind spots. To me, the glaring one would be, and I would not, Matt, pretend to be an X's and O's expert either. It just does seem that if there is a flaw within the coaching aspect of it, because I think as a program manager, it's kind of hard to beat what he does. But as far as the in-game coaching and the X's and O's, what little I do know about it, all I know is that there does seem to be repeating patterns of, let's say, the Bilodeau from UCLA. Someone get out on him. Or you take Maryland. I know we're depleted in the front court, but 68 points of the, you know, right, where these things would happen. You'd be watching the game and like a slow drip, you're like, do something, anything. 1-3, one box and one. I don't give a crap. And, you know, we saw, I think, what, 2 possessions of zone against Maryland, right? Threw stuff that against the wall. We didn't win that game. But, I mean, the Bronx cheer in that stadium was like, thank you. Here's the thing, though. I say all this fully acknowledging that, like, the criticisms that I would levy towards Brad Underwood, if I could have a preface in every tweet that said, hey, like, I'm still happy with what he's done, and not just happy, everyone's happy, appreciative, like grateful for what he's done, because he's made us relevant in a way that has been since the early 2000s. I guess my overarching question is just that, as fans or commentators or, you know, couch armchair analyzers of this program and stuff, you know, what line we draw in terms of if things aren't going well or things could be better, when is it okay to speak on it? When is it not? And I think it might have more to do with, and you guys would probably agree with this, is that you saw the tweet like after the Wisconsin game. It wasn't that there was criticism being levied. It was the way it was framed, or it was the manner in which it was framed, and the fact that it went more macro than you guys probably would have agreed with.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I think, like, having had 2024 after the down year that was 23, it kind of instructed us to be like, okay, we've seen it when it's down, and even down is a top 30 something team, and then you come back the next year and you do really well. We've seen it when you lose Io in 2021 and you win a Big Ten championship the next year. So that's why we came to the defense of Brad, like, come on, like, he's shown us before. Are we really gonna complain about a couple losses when we're still like going to make the tournament again? So I think we come to Brad's defense, and we're very defensive given just the consistency that you just talked about of that 6 straight wins. And like, I don't know, I was a fan during the Bruce Weber era, and it really felt like, okay, we're gonna have like a good year in 2009, then we're gonna take a step back in 2010, and then good year in 11, and then take another step back in 2012, and
major, like, step back. Oh my god.
Yeah. And not even being able to capitalize after 05, like, he just couldn't recruit anyone, and you made it to the national championship and you lose out on every single guy. And then slowly, like, the program gets worse and worse. So we have such an appreciation. Maybe we don't appreciate enough the quality of the Illinois program that you as a fan understand, or even Brad, who took this team, understands. So yeah, we'll be on the more like defensive side of things.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think it's fair.
I think our, again, admittedly, I did not become a fan until I attended the university. Like, so again, my expectations are not of, you know, the last 100 years of Illinois basketball or the last 20 years of Illinois basketball. They are from 2014 to 2018. So maybe I should raise my expectations a little bit. And I feel like this is also, there's like a parallel here with football, right? Where it's like 4 or 5 years ago, if you asked the average Illinois football fan, it's like, if you could just go 6-6 every year and just go to a bowl game, I've been like, where do I sign? Like, where do I sign up?
100%.
Going into 2025 now, Mike, like, if you told me now we're going 6-6, I'd be crying on the floor here right now. So expectations, and, you know, it matters. It absolutely matters, sort of the context of what your expectation is going into the season. So maybe I should raise my expectations for what Illinois basketball should be year in, year out. Because again, when I close my eyes and I think of Illinois basketball, I think of Jalen Tate and Khalid Lewis and John Gross. And, you know, I could go on and on and on.
Mark Alston.
Mark Allstork, Stork.
See, I can't even remember his freaking name.
Adonis De La Rosa. I mean, I could go name for name for these 4 years. So again, like with football, for example, the expectation, the standard has now been raised, and it feels like that with basketball too. Where, no, if you told me we go 6-6 next year, no, I saw the 7.5 over under win total, and we talked about on the podcast the other day.
Hit the over.
I was like, we're driving.
7.5, that's it.
Johnny's driving to Johnny's gonna be in Vegas.
Had it at that, yeah.
Yeah, 7.5. Johnny's gonna be in Vegas this weekend for a bachelor party.
You know, you're stuck.
He's putting next 6 months' rent on. All right, are you hearing this for the first time?
I didn't know the 7.5. I'll throw him 100 through Venmo and just say put it down on over. But I mean, you know what's funny about that too is like I think that what happened, like, okay, so to take expectations for football, just as a quick diversion, like, you know, all that said, if they go 8-4 next year, like I'm happy. Like, in other words, that is still, I think, in a historical context, probably playing in there, where I'm holding the two programs to different standards, even though what Bielema did this year was remarkable. And I don't think there was a better guy for that job, despite the poorly worded tweet after the Kansas game 2 years or a year and a half ago. And even then I was like, I mean, I remember the very next day on the podcast saying, like, I explained what I meant and acknowledged that that was a very poorly executed tweet and it deserved the crap that it got. And then I said, listen, like, Brett Bielema, like, we got to ride this out, because whatever happened last night, he has a track record. He's won in the Big Ten. I don't care if it's another 3, 4, 5 years, like, just ride it out, because we cannot keep doing this thing. Right. No. But with basketball, yeah, I think it is interesting, because your guys' context makes 100% sense, because if that would have been my formative years watching Illinois basketball, seeing John Gross through the early Brad Underwood era, with the context before that being Bruce Weber unable to capitalize on what he inherited in 03, 04, 05, then yeah, I would be like, God, Brad is the guy. I do think overall, historically, Brad Underwood, I mean, here's the deal. He is a Final Four appearance away from unquestionably being the best coach in Illinois basketball history.
You've got to win. Four, that's it. You're telling me, Mike, he's one. He's an 11 seed or a win against a 3 seed, a 2 seed, a 1 seed away, or in the first round, you know, 10 seed from being the best of all time.
I think so only because what's the comp? Bill Self is a unicorn. The 3-year blip that was amazing and set up your run early with Bruce Weber, who did maximize what he inherited. He just couldn't build on it. So, yeah, I mean, I this is why I think it's actually a valuable conversation, because I appreciate you guys' context. It makes 100% sense. And I think there's a lot of valid points there. There have been times where my emotion has led to a reaction, whether it be on the podcast or be a tweet, where I'm maybe illogically frustrated. And then that's hampering my ability to make a clean commentary or analysis on what I saw, or really make any damn sense when I do it. And that brings me back to my ultimate point, which is, you know, the criticisms, even after the Wisconsin game, or especially after the Duke game, which, I mean, I think if anything, that's the closest it got to being personal. I can't. And what I mean by that is I can't pretend I was like Stephen Bardo, who had a kind of clip that went viral. It was 5 minutes and him talking about how much that game bothered him as an alum, as a player on the team. And listen, I never suited up for him. I just sit in the stands. I got no blood, sweat, and tears like these players or coaches do. But there was a pride hit where I thought, damn, man, like, yeah. I don't want that to be one line of demarcation we look back as like a consequential game for Brad Underwood. I don't want that to be a signature game for the worst possible reasons. I don't ultimately think it will be. But I do think that as we ride this roller coaster, and I ride it as much as anybody, when you get into those valleys, and the valley this year was a little bit more pronounced even than 2023 because of the margins of defeat, that it was, well, wait a second. With as volatile as college basketball is by its nature right now, are we going to be able to fix it, but are we going to be able to consistently attain what he did? I mean, in other words, just the tricky thing is he's done it before, so we should have confidence he could do it again. But then on the other hand, and whether this is cynicism or skepticism, just because it's happened before doesn't guarantee it will happen again. And that's where I found myself waffling in that stretch. Now, sure. They beat Michigan by 21 points, and what the hell? Like, who knows anything? And certainly I am foot and mouth many, many times.
Yeah, Mike, just to go back to one of your comments, because sure. I'm going to remember when you're tweeting about, like, when we're playing Ohio State next year in football, I'm going to remember you saying that if we're 8-4, I'm happy. So I'm just going to make sure.
Please
that
do. No, and I mean that. I mean sure that because I don't want.
I won't
don't
be.
Want
I'll
fans.
Be upset. I'll be upset at 8-4. Really? I want to be very clear. I don't know. You bring back everyone. If you're over under 7.5 or you win 8, come on, I want to go at least a game or two. But
I just say that only because, and I do mean that, and you can hold me accountable of that because
I'm kidding.
No, you should because
Josh is like, I'm retired from, you know, hating.
Because, you know, even like an at Washington, I look at, I'm like, oh God, ugh, at Duke. I'm a little less worried about that with everyone coming back.
That could
back,
be rock bottom still. If we lose. To
I'm
them.
Most nervous
if
about
to Duke. If we guys, lose to I Duke. Got,
I on my Podbean account, it's the title's already loaded for September 8th. It's just right. There in case
rock
we lose
top.
To Duke.
Rock top.
Pod, Rock Tennessee. Bottom Part 2, Electric yeah. Boogaloo.
Yes.
Yeah, sorry, Josh.
No, I was going to say, like, help me here. What makes us different as Illinois fans compared to Purdue fans who sat through Matt Painter for 11 years before in the 12th year he made his first Elite Eight. Well, he had many tournament appearances. He made it to the Sweet 16 1, 2, 3 times during that stretch. But I guess, like, what makes it different for us in year 9? It's already year 9, which is
that's
crazy.
Insane. No, crazy. Year 8.
Year 8,
right?
year 8.
Still.
Quick look at a table didn't do it for me. But like, what makes us different here?
That's a great question. What's funny? You would think Purdue, because I don't think they won a national title either.
I don't. Well, yeah.
Unless it was way back in 19, Dick at E3.
We won our 19. We won, but we won back in 15.
They have, so we
claim it.
We claim the 15. The 15 team was special.
But, you know, that's a great question. I mean, Purdue might be, to use that term again, a unicorn as far as fan bases. They just seem blissfully like, oh, we got Mackey Arena. We only got bleachers. We're just having a good old time and the paint crew, whatever. It's funny because my wife's a Michigan State alum. So when they're in town, we go together. We've been to Breslin the last 2 years. I go up to Breslin and it's just like hunky-dory. Everyone's just happy. That's great. We got Tom Izzo. It's his 35th year. We haven't been to a Final Four in a while, but they're just happy. They're content because why? In my opinion, it's they got two national title banners. I think Illinois fans, I think the difference, Josh, and I can't remember if Purdue does or does not have a national title, but it just feels as if there is this albatross. And I two games specifically that linger. For my dad and that generation of fans, and even a little bit younger than him, it was the fact that, you know, we didn't block out Sean Higgins. He got the putback from Michigan. They beat us, and all we would have had to do is beat Seton freaking Hall to win a national title in 89. And it's funny because, you know, I was growing up, and I always remember loving watching those VHS tapes of them, thinking, that's amazing. We could make the Final Four. We did then. And then there was a part of me that kind of resented them because I thought, damn it. If you guys just would have won it, even though I wouldn't remember it, then people would be so much less pissed off at the Assembly Hall when things didn't go well. I think that's what it is, Josh, is that it's that lingering frustration of not having that. So everything does get slightly under the microscope. What I've tried to be careful of, and I fail at sometimes, is not letting angst inform a criticism. The angst that has informed criticism of Brad this year are more to do with the, I mentioned the lack of accountability. Specifically, I think that what he has been so good at as far as press availability, press conferences, just kind of like a frank way of talking, he's lacked that this year. Again, it might be protective for his team, not throwing them under the bus, saying, you know, trying to even maybe posture for the selection committee, saying, hey, injuries, illness. And now that they're whole again, hey, guess what? That argument is going to hold a lot more water as they get to Selection Sunday, and it might work out beautifully. I think that that's fair. I don't have a great answer for that other than the lingering lack of a national title. And I do think that not just me, but I mean, you guys would agree the Twitter after Wisconsin, after Duke, and I hope in a negative way I did not contribute to it, though I'm sure indirectly I may have. You saw an outpouring of rage. Yeah. Meanwhile, you guys are like, well, this sucks, but because you know your context as well.
Well, it's funny, Mike, though, the angst that you were describing, we would be feeling it so much had this team not won in the tournament last year. Like, could you imagine the Wisconsin game and the Duke game if we had a round of 32 exit? Like, people would have been calling for Brad's job.
If we lost to Duke, 100%.
Yeah, if we had lost to Duke, people would have been like, this guy's a choke artist. We're never going to win with him after that Wisconsin game. After, like, there would just be no excuses. So I think we can all appreciate that angst. And we have our own now of like, all right, we've made it to the Elite Eight. We've won a Big Ten championship. Like at some point in Brad's tenure, like we need that Final Four. So I think we're not going to also lower the expectations for our program as a whole. And I think for us right now, it's just like, okay, we view this as a transition year, down year, but we still have like very high expectations. And this can't just become like the new norm or standard for Brad, but we just have a ton of confidence in it.
We also we also say frequently, like on our podcast, that the tournament is such a crapshoot, and like you just gotta throw a dart, and maybe that's the dart that lands. Our dart showed an elite.
Sometimes in the case of the University of Connecticut, who was by far and large, they were the best team. They won it 6 games by double digits. Yes, this is the argument we have every year of like, how much stock do you put into 20 game conference season and non-con versus a 3 weekend tournament where you play a couple, you know, mini tournaments, 2 games each time. And it's like, what does that say about your ability to coach if you're winning Big Ten championships and conference championships, but you're bowing out in the first weekend? Like, it's the Fran McCaffrey argument. It's like, he resurrected the University of Iowa, but he hasn't been to a Sweet 16. Is he a good coach? And again, obviously the context of Iowa basketball is very different. But every March, I feel like we have this conversation of like, how much stock do you put into the 0-6 games that Brad can, the 1-6 games that Brad can play in the tournament every month.
And that's why it was probably so rewarding as a Purdue fan, if you were a Matt Painter defender, to have this last season, given they lost to a 16 seed, they lost to St. Peter's. Like, everyone was saying this guy is not a tournament winner. But to Mike's point, maybe that Purdue fans are just a little more happy and jolly.
Maybe.
I don't know.
And I mean, their student section is certainly nuts, a little more engaged in a positive way than maybe the Orange Crush is.
You guys want to have that conversation?
we would love to. Honestly, Mike, that's one of our favorite things, Mike, is, and we alluded to a little bit when we were just chatting beforehand, of now we all kind of have a voice with our Twitter accounts, right? You have yours. We have the boardroom. We've got a few thousand followers. So now the comments that you would just be making to your buddy is now going to a large audience. And sometimes that means the best things you say are going to a large audience and a lot of people support you. Or maybe you say you don't like where the program is going and that gets picked up. But
yeah,
it's a really interesting thing to kind of have a platform like that. So I'm curious how you feel about it, given, I don't know, that's what kind of brought us together here today.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I sometimes, especially in this landscape, you know, so I got my my first degree was in journalism. I didn't practice news editorial like the degree was for, but I was at 93.5 for a while. And so like the core tenets of journalism, I've always tried to kind of have that in my head, whether it be at the radio station or with the podcast. I've always tried to delineate sort of, okay, if this is the route I'm going to take, then, you know, certainly there's less of a sort of like objectivity slant that I need to worry about. But nonetheless, I need to try to be fair in criticisms. And most importantly, when I just plain get it wrong. I mean, I know in the book, like last year, halftime of the Valparaiso game, we're trailing Roger Powell Jr. in Valparaiso by 6-7 points. And I tweet out, we just ran it back. We just ran it back. And it's going to be just 2023 all over again. Starts at the top. And then it's like, no, I was wrong, dead wrong. Well, okay, you better take accountability for that. So I think what's interesting, John, is that without trying to make this too big of a conversation, a lot of the biggest like influencers on a national level, it's not the news anchors on the network stations anymore. It's like the Joe Rogans. And I'm not going to make any points about Joe Rogan because I'm not a regular listener. But my concern about anyone with that much of an influence is that they are not equipped or trained in any journalistic principles to know, okay, if I got this reach, what's my responsibility? So in my little pocket of, okay, some Illini basketball and football fans, and they'll tune the podcast sometimes on a micro scale. I do think about, okay, I don't want to add toxicity. So you'll notice, for example, the words I use are never suck or this or that. However, you guys are fair to point out that, you know, there could be completely words that by themselves are relatively benign, but in the context of a tweet, it's like, well, Carb, what are you getting at? And that's why it's like, can I just podcast so I can get all the thoughts out in an hour instead of brevity? Like Ernest Hemingway said, brevity is the soul of wit. And I'm like, I'm just going to yammer on for about an hour by myself. So that way I can really just, you know, spew it all out there.
Sure.
Long-winded way, John, of saying that I've thought about it. I think about it often. It's really for me just, okay, be fair, be your voice. Don't pretend as if you're speaking for all fans, because I'm not speaking for all fans, but there is also that air of catharsis that whether it's good or bad, I hope that the live reaction podcast or like the hop on after a loss or a win sort of thing is just like, okay, if they're tuning on their car the next day, it's an outlet for them as an Illini fan. I don't know if that makes sense or not. And that was extremely long-winded.
That's what people are looking for, though. Again, like, and we talk about on our show, too. It's like, you want to read recruiting news? You want to read, like, analysis? Like, there are hundreds of places to go get that. Like, we are just kind of meatball fans that, you know, try to feel like we're representative of probably the average Joe watching a basketball game and try to sort of extrapolate to that experience a little bit. And yeah. I think that that's probably relatable to a lot of people on your show, Mike. I've listened to some of your where you do like the live of the second half, and it's super fun for some of the games where it's like, it seems like we're about to lose. And as I'm listening to you, it's like, this guy thinks we're going to lose because you're in the past, obviously. And it's like, he doesn't know what's about to come.
He
doesn't know the shot we're about to hit right here. And then I'm like, I can't wait to see what his reaction is. And it's like, he hits it. And it's like, that's fun. That's relatable. Right. I think people want that type of like emotional stuff. But yeah, to be honest, we have no training in journalism. We couldn't have been further.
Let me rephrase. Nor do you need to. Nor do you need to. But I think it was a good question by John, because like if we are on these relatively niche platforms, like, you know, I look at what like a Jeremy Warner does. I look at the reach that Robert has. Like they each have their own niche. Jeremy being like, okay, he's covering the beat. He's getting the access. Robert has just cornered the football market. I mean, the things he knows about Illini football, like, I'd like to think I'm half that knowledgeable about Illini basketball, you know, in historical context. But I may not be, because it's just like an encyclopedic knowledge kind of thing.
He's built different.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I always have been marveled at the fact that, like, I mean, with Illini football, I've always been invested. But like, I'm sorry, like when Tim Beckman's 2-10. I'm not going to the stadium on November 15th to watch us get our ass kicked, but like I'm watching from home because I can't, you know, so,
yeah.
But no, that was a great question, John. And I think that it's, part of the fun of this is knowing you're talking directly to other fans. Part of the fun for me, and you guys might experience this too, when you're up at, what's the bar in Lakeview again?
Finley Dunn's.
Okay. And it might be there, or it might be at a tailgate, or it might be at State Farm Center, where someone just comes up and says, hey, yeah, love the pod. And it might be like once a tailgate or something like that. And it's just like, oh, great. Like, it's just, all it is it's just cool as an Illini fan to feel like, oh, well, I'm just part of the conversation. All it is I got a microphone and a computer. I just put it out there. And being on the radio as long as I did probably helped kind of establish some like foundational things with how I talk about it. But I mean, the cool thing is these are really not that different than the conversations my dad and his friends were having over Miller Lights on a Friday night when I was growing up. It was just about Deion Thomas and Richard Keene and Lou Henson. The names have changed, but conversations really haven't.
And I think that's relatable. Mike, one thing that no one can argue is your fan. And what I will say is you think this is the first time you've met us, but believe it or not, we have somewhat met you last year at the Kansas game. We did.
That's right.
We did sit in front of you. We sat in front of you.
Oh,
I'll tell
boy.
You the story at the Kansas game.
You know what's coming.
This
right?
guy,
oh, I know what's coming. Yeah. I'm glad I was not employed by the university when this happened. Because
how bizarre tweets, not tweets, context, whatever. Like, I cannot question your fandom to this team in having the privilege of sitting in front of you at the Kansas game for 3.5 hours back in September.
Question. Were you there when the Kansas fans were not shutting up?
So I mean the details are fuzzy. There were some youth potentially of or not of the drinking age, and they were I wasn't really I don't know, I was so focused on the game, you know, but there was you let them know
so what's so funny is a few days later I went in to do this guest speaker thing at a journalism class about sports journalism. So I go in there and there were a couple football players. So after the game, afterwards, they come up and I talk to them a little bit. And I just asked them, I was like, hey, by the way, did you guys happen to notice like a group of unruly Kansas college kids? But and he was like, those dudes wouldn't shut up all game long. And I was like, yeah, well, I may or may not have gotten into a profanity-laced tirade with
them. I was like, whoa, this like you, it was like personal. It was you took that like responsibility of like, this is our home turf. We're in section 109 right now, and like you took it was like a 12-v-1 there, Mike. Like I kind of regret not kind of coming your
it was more
there.
Of a word art. It was a word argument, let's be clear.
There were no fisticuffs. Yeah, I want to be very clear. I would not
oh man
if well there were fisticuffs, but it, y'all were going and it's like, damn, this is an Illini fan.
So right that here. Was how you guys would have the first time you were in my
well I mean I've no I obviously have
no,
been
but like in person.
Yeah, no, we never saw you at the games before, like, and how your feelings, you express yourself during the games.
Oh, is that typical for you? Is that typical? Is that
no,
a typical?
No,
because that's fine if you should see Johnny during, or you shouldn't see Johnny during a game, a basketball game.
Oh, well, let me rephrase. During the game, like, that was a fun game. I mean, even when, like, we were trailing for most of the first half, but it was competitive, and I thought, hey, like, we got a shot in the fourth quarter. Well, pick six, and then the fourth quarter drive by Luke, but... Yeah, so great night, great atmosphere. Just one of the most fun times I had. And then the Michigan game was literally like the greatest day of my life. But what's funny, I'm just kind of like flabbergasted here because I'm like, oh my God, like I know what was coming out of my mouth towards those Kansas dudes.
Yeah.
And they deserved every bit of it. I kept looking at the security lady like, could you please be a security person and escort them to, because they would not move themselves from that gate. They would not stop, and
they were in the process of getting kicked out by security, and then they left, and like obviously they were yelling at every Illinois fan that would like interact with them, and so you're like, okay, my turn, and then they leave, and then they somehow get their way right back to those same.
They got back.
It happened again.
Yeah. Well, and hey, you know what? When they left, I didn't say a word. I'm just blissfully happy we got the win. Well, sorry. Go ahead, Matt.
No, I was going to say, like, you defended your turf right there. As you got to keep home field advantage there. So I respect that. Next time, like, we're sitting in the same section there in the fall, I'll make sure.
You are.
You know,
okay, good.
Any,
I
I'm
will
saying
be
if
there.
We are, right, well, I'll make sure, you know, if Western, if any Western Michigan Broncos fans get unruly, you know, if they, like, go up 3-0 or something in the first quarter next fall. I got your back.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Well, we've been on here for over an hour. I appreciate it. I don't want to keep you guys any longer. I will say, like, when you are down for any football games, I'm in the same lot as Robert is. So, you know, definitely come say hi. I appreciate the fact because, like, here's the deal. Like, Twitter spats, whatever. It truly, even in the midst of like as frustrated as it might have gotten, when you know that you're conversing with other Illini fans, it never feels personal, so to speak. Like even in the worst tweets where someone might have like gotten like trying to take personal digs or something, the most I could ever do is like maybe a mute. But it's like, yeah, like they can still hang around for the conversation. And never even approach that. And you guys, I appreciate all the context that you guys offer, because I think that matters. And I think that I always like just kind of checking myself and saying, okay, what's the message I'm trying to get across? Am I effectively delivering that message? And if not, how can I fine tune that? So I always kind of like playing those sort of mental games and making sure that I'm doing the best I can. And you guys, I think that it's valuable to have different perspectives, because for you guys, having gone through that, what you did, good God, I think it's meaningful to have people to live through that crap talking about this.
It makes every win way more meaningful. I feel like it allows us to appreciate the wins, I feel like, more. And then it makes us like understand when losses happen that like it could be worse. So
100%. It always could be worse, right? When we were 0-8 conference play our senior year, we got that first conference win.
Yeah.
I was probably as stoked as I was.
Yes, that's 2018. Right.
I was probably as stoked as I would be like if we beat Purdue on Friday. That's probably like the same level of excitement. Like, so
yeah,
we've come a long way.
I lost what I was about to say.
That's okay. Well, last question before we go, just okay. Purdue Friday, I do think is a consequential game in terms of just like, I mean, I think if you win that, people are like, they're back. I mean, just in general, because all of a sudden then you're 12-8 in conference. You're probably a sixth seed in the tournament. You got a decent draw. It looks like if things kind of shake out the way they should this week, you're going to have a decent draw in the Big Ten tournament. So what the hell, shoot your shot with that. I mean, do you guys have expectations for the rest of the year? It's a hard team to put your finger on, but I don't know, what the hell.
If you get to the second weekend of the tournament, like with the exception of if you're like a one seed, if you get to the second week of the tournament, because what if you're a six seed, you're playing an 11, and then what are you playing? A three.
Yeah,
a three.
Like, so I don't know if your odds of beating an 11 seed are probably around 70%-ish. And then your odds of beating a three seed are probably 35. So I can't do the math there, but you've got, you know, whatever percent change, multiply those together. Like, so if you get out of the first weekend there, with the exception of being a one seed, to me, that's fun. You get a whole other week to just like live in and read and consume all the content and all
best
the media and all the good feels. You get that until next Thursday or Friday. So like for me, if you get out of the first weekend, rest is gravy.
Massively successful. Agree.
Yep. That's my take. Yep.
But also if you lose in the first weekend, it's not the end of the world.
Unless
you're one seed. But no, I'm talking about us. Like Mike is asking about our expectations. Like beating Purdue will obviously sway on how I feel about this team a lot.
Yeah.
What's funny is I think even beating Purdue would put us, depending on how other games shake out this week, like it puts us in as maybe a six in the Big Ten tournament, but also a six in the actual tournament, which would be kind of just funny in itself that relates where you're the same seed in the Big Ten versus overall. But I think getting to that six is so important. The variability of playing a two versus a three seed is just so high. And I do think that we should beat Purdue. They've obviously had our number the last four years. So this is the year. I mean, they don't have an ED, and now we have a version of it in Tommy. I really think we can win that game. I don't care about the Big Ten tournament. That tournament itself is always like gravy to me. Like it's like, if we can get a banner, that's amazing. But it's still, it's gravy. It just does. Are we able to set ourselves up better? Is that what that tournament is going to tell me? And I do think, I don't know. We met the expectations I had of the season. And so a win in the first round probably is less meaningful than obviously what would happen in the round of 32.
He had to drop for connection reasons, but he's saying national championship or bust.
Okay.
That's always his expectation.
I mean, no, I think Josh, go ahead. Sorry.
There was one question that you asked way earlier that I kind of finally came to my answer. Just wanted to point out one thing. And it's mm-hmm. if you asked about like, where do you have your criticism? And you mentioned something about the way that Brad treats the media.
Which I normally thought he's been an expert at that.
Yeah, he's an expert. I think the one thing that we always have, what we've learned as fans of Brad's coach teams, is that every word that he says has to be taken with like the biggest grain of salt ever. Fair. And so he's never, you're right. He's never giving you like what he's actually feeling. But I think that every single time he's doing that, he's doing it for the benefit of the team. And so he's going to tell you someone's elite at passing or someone's a great rebounder or the team. I'm okay with the team is good shooting threes. Cause if he starts putting that negativity in the world, like if he starts saying, yeah, I got to change up my approach, which we would love as fans, cause that's what we're like craving. It's going to put something negative into his team. Like there is validity to like being, having constructive criticism towards your team, but I don't think he ever wants that publicly.
Yeah, you're right. He's been pretty consistent with that.
It's the don't throw your kicker under the bus thing after he misses three field. It's like, what are you going to say? Yeah, my kicker sucks. Like, then it gets in his head. What are you going to say? You know, stop shooting threes, guys. Like, you got to play the media game a little bit, and probably most coaches play the media game. You're never it is not mutually beneficial for your kids' psyches, for your athlete psyches, to say, oh yeah, they can't shoot threes. They should stop shooting. You never throw the kicker under the bus.
I mean, not to say the Michigan game was consequential in a lot of ways. I mean, if this is in fact a team that is finally awaking from a 6-week injury and illness riddled slumber, and that's what it is. And there is a chance that's what it is. I mean, I even in my last Substack where I was very critical, but I said, but these are factors, you know, and it's sort of like, well, I guess by the end of the year, we'll know to what extent. And all of a sudden you have that like, whoa moment. And if they come out Friday, you know, gangbusters, and they win 11 or 12, which I'll be honest, the way Purdue's playing, I think is entirely in the cards.
For sure.
Then you're thinking, oh, I mean, myself, I mean, like, that's why I was really very deliberate after Sunday. Like, that win was massive. Like, that was unbelievable when you consider all the circumstances of the season. But I agree with Josh, though. I mean, I'm not going to sit here if they win a game, lose a game in the tournament, and say, psh, bunch of crap, Brett, you know, suck up, you know, like Marv muttering curse words under his breath in Home Alone. I'm not going to do that. I think it's really at that point, if they even lose in the first round, but it's a competitive game. And like there were games like the Chattanooga one, which was such a slog and you won, but had you lost that, it would have felt like a disaster. I mean, there are disappointing efforts that could be had in the tournament. But barring that, I'm not going to enter the off season thinking any less. I do think this Purdue game, it can really just be the elixir. I mean, Michigan was a shot of adrenaline. Purdue would be like, all right, guys, you know, here's whatever last little dose of medicine you need to be like, okay, it's March. And I tweeted this out Sunday, 17-5 in Big Ten regular season and Big Ten tournament games in March for Brad Underwood in the last 6 years. 17-5 in the most consequential month with the hardest games. I mean, I remember the most incredible three-game stretch, I think, of his tenure still, is the last three games of the regular season in 21.
Yep.
At Wisconsin, despite Demetric Trice going off
19 late. Points last minute or whatever it was, not something nuts like that. Yeah,
at Michigan, which was just perfection, and then a gritty win at Ohio State. And awesome. It's like, oh, we're gonna get a one seed, just like
awesome. That I still feel the high from that. Like, I can recount the end of that Ohio State game, and we all watched that. Like, I can feel that,
and then the exhausted sort of half exhaustion, half catharsis. I'll throw another half in there. Half just pure jubilation when you held on in overtime the next week against Ohio State and what was just that game was like pulling teeth. And Georgie Bishanishvili helps deliver you your Big Ten tournament title. Yeah, no, I do want to end just saying, sure. I appreciate the conversation.
Thanks, Mike.
I love, as you guys do, this is the best time of year. These 5 months are my favorite, as fun as football was. Like, I mean, basketball, as frustrated as certain moments can get. I mean, even at its lowest with Brad Underwood, there have been far many more moments of just pure happiness. So I do not take that for granted. I'm grateful for where it is at his program And off seasons are consequential. I think the way they end this season can make this off season a little less consequential and a little more like, oh, well, no, we got enough stuff established to just keep rolling. And I hope that's the outcome. And I think that there's a path to that now where I didn't see that 2 weeks ago. And that's a nice place to be.
Yeah, fair enough. I think there could be some good continuity in that. But like what you said there is so huge, is that as long as like we finish on the right note. Sorry, man. Yeah.
No, I was gonna say after 90 minutes of talking, I think at the end of the day, it like turns out we just agree on everything, and that we this could have been an email after all that. Or this could have been a tweet or something.
I don't know about that.
Boy, Mike, this was fun. Thanks for having us on.
We'll make sure the people that have been taking sides to this whole thing, hopefully they have their answer now.
Josh, Matt, John, appreciate you guys. And I'll send you this video here in just a bit. But yeah, guys, take care. Thanks for the conversation.
Awesome. Thanks, Mike. See you later.
See you guys. Take care.